Welcome into Wildcat Insider. I'm John Kurtz, joined by the voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson and Mitch Fortner. Today, we will be talking some basketball. We have transfer news. Did not get a chance last week to talk and react to the Dejuan Gordon news. Rudy Williams in there as well because of baseball on Friday. But we'll do that, talk some spring football and pretty crazy couple of days of the NCAA tournament. Oklahoma just going down earlier and Kansas is up tonight, so there's still a lot more to come on the Big 12 front. As always, tweet us at the game KMAN. You can tweet me at JL Kurtz. You can tweet Mitch at Mitch the Fort. So we start with the transfer news. We knew about Antonio Gordon about a week ago. That didn't come as too much of a surprise after he missed the end of the season there. And Bruce Weber said total health issues. It didn't seem to be a just seemed like an odd explanation. Antonio Gordon leaves, but I was surprised to see Dejuan Gordon's name be put on that transfer list late last week. Dejuan Gordon and Rudy Williams. And Bruce Weber had, I thought, a pretty telling quote. You don't usually see a quote like this in a press release announcing that someone's leaving. It's usually much more generic. But Bruce Weber says, after several conversations with Dejuan and his family following the season, he informed me of his decision. Although Dejuan has played significant minutes and started most games the past two seasons, he indicated his desire to have a larger role offensively. Obviously, we're disappointed with his decision, but we wish him the best in basketball and in life. So, to me, this is a pretty tough blow. I hate having to hold it up in comparison to Antonio Gordon and be like, hey, one player better than the other. But, I mean, I think Dejuan was giving you more value than what Antonio was. And Dejuan, frankly, provided a lot more value than I gave him credit for at the beginning of the season by the time the year was done. So that to me is a pretty big hit to lose Dejuan.
I agree. It is frustrating and disappointing that he has made the decision that he has made, at least from my perspective. And I think you see that in the quote that you just read there from Coach Weber. I don't think there was any part of Coach Weber that wanted Dejuan to leave the program. And yet I think that quote again is pretty telling in that there was some separation in what Dejuan is thinking as opposed to what Bruce Weber is thinking. And I think we all understand what Dejuan Gordon is. And that is a really terrific athlete who is a plus defender, who is a, well, I'll just get out my chart here and tell you that is a young man who averaged basically 9.1 points a game, 5.5 rebounds, which is outstanding, and 1.4 assists per ball game, and was in double figures in 13 to 25 games. Not all bad numbers. And yet, you look at the percentage numbers at 38 and 22 for the season, and 35 and 21 in league play. I think, I don't want to speak for Coach in any way, but I think you have to question, why is he wanting a bigger role offensively based on that? Come back, get in the gym, retool the shot a little bit, get better, then maybe you have a little bit more of an argument. Again, that's just my opinion only. But I think that back to that quote, read it again. It's pretty telling in what it says. It basically says he wanted a bigger role offensively, and maybe it's kind of hard for Coach to say, I can do that.
Yeah, well, although Dejuan has played significant minutes and started most games the past two seasons, he indicated his desire to have a larger role offensively. We're disappointed with the decision, but we wish him the best in basketball and life. Yeah, I think there are two sides to the coin, and I definitely lean more toward, I wonder about the advice that Dejuan is getting there. Because
there's a whole other subject there, too.
There are a lot of people in kids' ears at this point in time, especially with a penalty-free year coming up this year.
Yep.
You know, you have to worry about that period, but especially right now. I would also say, you know, I mean, if you want to go somewhere and play for, if the idea here is, well, I want to go somewhere and play where I know that I'm getting a coach who hangs his hat on being a terrific offensive guy. Like, offense is what we do. Then I would be more understanding of it in a way, you know, because Bruce Weber's really hung his hat on defense, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 2 years, they've finished offensively 170 or worse in KenPom's offensive efficiency ratings, those being the 2 years that Dejuan has been there. Now there's some chicken or the egg there. Hey, if Dejuan were a better offensive player, then the offensive numbers might be better. But again, I could cut him some slack if that were the case. It at least what we're hearing from the K-State side of things, it doesn't seem like that's really how it's being painted. So I would be curious what the conversations are actually like behind closed doors there. But I definitely lean more toward you're probably not going to go to a Power 5 school that's going to make you a bigger part of what they're doing offensively than what K-State did. You know, I think that's do you want to transfer back home somewhere closer to Chicago and a smaller school around there, like a DePaul? I mean, I'm just that would all be speculation. But if that's the idea and you think you can be their number one or two scorer, like, okay, like maybe I can get that. But if you're wanting to be a Power 5 level player, and I just don't think you're going to find that where you're going to be more of a part of an offense.
I think you said a lot there, and what I would try to add on top of that is I think from, and again, I referenced the quote from Coach Weber first here, in that from my perspective, that is pretty clear what coach is thinking. I think it's a little more fuzzy what the player is thinking in this particular case, other than he has said that he wants a bigger role offensively. Apparently that meant here at some point, and there was some disconnect on as to whether that would be a real possibility or not. Fair?
Yeah, it sounds like that obviously would have been where it started.
And for my money, so to speak, I'll say this about Dejuan. I think he's a nice young guy. He was always good to me. I liked him as a person. I think he brings, you know, some things to the table, but I think this is more about bettering his basketball future in his mind. Okay, but for me, I think I'm just going to be blunt about this. The K-State basketball future is what's the most important from my eye. And I don't know if him having a bigger role is the best at that particular moment as we look towards next year. I mean, do you think he deserves more shots than Davion or Nigel, as an example?
No, he's
or
definitely...
Or Mike McGurl if Mike comes back?
Yeah, I mean, he's looking at third or fourth
option. And again, there's the unknown I'm trying to get to there. Of what Dejuan is thinking. Is he looking at himself from this past season as the third or fourth or fifth option? And if he is, I understand. I have a better, easier time seeing that than I do him thinking that he should be option number one or number two. I guess that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and even then, it's just like you said, you'd have to become a much better shooter to really be more of a legitimate option offensively for anybody, K-State included. And I think at K-State, you at least have some cachet built up as to what it is that you can do and what it is that you provide, and turning into, you know, the role that he had, which was kind of a garbage man, finding ways to score around the basket. I mean, he turned in at the end of the year to somebody that could really drive to the basket. You think about the Kansas game in particular, in Bramlage, where he turned that on, but a lot of what he is just hustle, rebounds, stickbacks, that kind of thing. And, I mean, there's obviously he had a big role with it. He scored 9 points and grabbed 6 rebounds per game doing that, like being somebody that really couldn't shoot at all. that shows a lot of value to me in what it is that you can be and what you can do. But, yeah, I think, you know, if he wants what I think the highest upside is for his, like, playing basketball at the highest level kind of career, it would be stick around and try and develop a three ball. But if this is about, like, hey, I want to go somewhere
and
smaller.
And a mid-range jump shot, too.
Sure. Yes. A jump shot. I should just leave that at a jump shot. Yeah. Stick around and develop a legitimate, consistent jumper. If he thinks there are better places to do that, and or he thinks he can go somewhere right away and just get enough shots that the pure volume of that is going to make him a better offensive player and be closer to home, like some combination of that, then, like, I'm open to understanding that for sure. I just, based on the limited information that we have right now, it seems fairly puzzling. Yes.
Yeah, I guess probably right. There are some things where you look at this entire piece and you think there's a little bit – if you say it's a puzzle, there appears to be a piece missing here that explains whatever, and maybe one here and one here. But at the end of the day, I think this boils down to, you know, a good young guy in a odd time with basically a free transfer year, thinking he can better himself on the offensive side of it if he goes somewhere else. I don't know if it's any more complicated than that.
Yeah, probably not. And yeah. The unfortunate part now is it just leaves K-State in a tough spot. Or, I mean, we'll see. I continue to say this, and we'll talk more about where K-State's at with this now. I mean, this does hurt a lot of my optimism for next year, but it's simply based on the fact that right now we have not seen this staff pull in high-level transfers in their time at K-State. They have pulled in high-level high school recruits that they have developed. I mean, we saw that with Barry, Dean, and Cam. We've seen it with Marcus Foster. Like, there's been a capability to do that, but I think what you have to do now is go bring in a real quality transfer or two, and that is just something that we haven't seen before. So, like, that's the tough part about the situation K-State's in now. I think it just puts even more pressure on you to do that and probably adds to the list of things that you need to go grab.
Well, again, I'll reference back to the free year, so to speak, and how confident are you with that if – because I think we all felt like there was going to be some attrition, not just here but virtually everywhere. Okay, we've seen it already at Carolina with a five-star kid leaving and things like that. What do you get back in return from the same tunnel, so to speak? You know, the same pie. Because it is a free year, there are going to be more players available, which I would tend to lean on saying the opportunity is better to land one of those guys. Now, what do you want? I mean, are you going to blanket it and say just somebody that can score, or are you going to be more specific and say I want a stretch four, or I want a three man, or I want a two guard that can really fill it up? Now you get into the meat of it, right? I mean, I don't know what is at the top of your wish list other than I've heard that a million times from most everybody. I want somebody that can score. Yep, I'm with you.
Yeah, someone that can shoot the ball.
But be a little more specific, I guess, is what I'm saying. And I think there will be – I guess I'm just saying there's going to be more of these types of players available than ever before this time. It may be a one-time deal, but I think based on that, you have to have at least a little bit of optimism that they can get somebody that will help them. Or some bodies that will help them.
There will be more options.
Yeah.
Clearly, there will be more options this year than ever before. All right, tweet us at the game KMAN. Tweet me at J.O. Kurtz. We move on with Wildcat Insider. I'm going to run some of the spring storylines, spring football storylines, that is, past Wyatt, including about the wide receivers. Seems like there's a lot of optimism right now about Malik Knowles and Keenan Garber. We'll see what Wyatt has to say about that coming up next. Back on Wildcat Insider, John Kurtz, Wyatt Thompson, Mitch Fortner, the crew all here with you. We will talk more about Dejuan Gordon and what it means for K-State moving forward throughout the show. Did you see and can pass this along to you as well, but Joe Petrakis also in the transfer portal. He is somebody that was just given a scholarship for this past semester. I guess technically it is a scholarship player leaving, but really what that will mean is just K-State needing some more walk-on help. Next year, but that is something I just saw come across Twitter here within the last 15-20 minutes or so. So as far as spring football is concerned, though, we have continued to hear from coaches and players with press conferences, and I thought there were a couple of headlines to come out of the latest round of those, which was last week. To me, it was the quarterbacks and the receivers I found to be the most interesting parts of the conversation. And we'll start with receivers because quarterback is sexier, but we do know that, I mean, Skyler is going to be the guy. Receiver, there's still more of a question about, like, okay, who are going to be the guys? You know, Malik Knowles will pretty much have to be one if they're going to be good at receiver. And the word from Courtney Messingham is that Malik Knowles is actually staying healthy right now and being much more focused.
It's him understanding that – the offseason so important for his development for game week, meaning that if he'll listen to the strength and conditioning staff, if he'll listen to our nutrition people, if he'll do the things before we ever get to game day, he's going to be that much better. And to this point, I feel like he's been doing that. He hasn't missed a one rep so far in spring ball. If he can keep working the way he's working, we'll be in good shape.
I love hearing that. I do. I especially love hearing the part about he hasn't missed a single snap yet, at least to that point, which was like last Tuesday, I think that we heard that. Hadn't missed a snap yet in spring ball. That's a very positive sign. I just will still need to actually see it out there on the field. But it sounds like the feeling within the program is that Malik has really turned a corner here dating back to the end of last season.
Yeah, I think the quote that you had there from Coach Messingham is pretty telling in that I think Malik really has always had the size and the capabilities. It's more about making sure you take the best care of your body possible, working hard to do that, on top of all of the other things that everybody has to do to play, you know, at this level and really be probably, let's be honest, he's kind of the lead guy. And they need him to stay healthy this year. They need him to take care of his body. They need him to do all of the things that a lead receiver would do. And that's probably going to be more than 200 receiving yards or whatever it was he had last year. He's got to be better. They've got to be better around him. But in my mind, it all starts with him. And he has had a good spring. I had an opportunity to watch him on Friday, watched again this morning at some practice time. And I think he has had a solid spring. It's easy to say this time of year, but in his particular case, I go back to the quote, and you add a couple of more practices onto that, well, three actually, Wednesday, Friday, and today, he's not missed any. You know, he's been out there. He's been productive. He's done a good job. I think he is a better football player today than at any time a year ago. I'll say it that way.
Also good news.
Yeah.
You know, also good news. And I hope that rings true. I think, to me, I buy that he is more focused and more committed and all of that. I think the questions to me are much more about the body holding up.
Sure.
You know, because I know he had a lot to deal with off the field last year, and there are plenty of things that made that much more difficult, and more difficult for everybody, by the way, with the pandemic circumstances.
But, of course.
But it's, can the body actually be there to allow
and that is, let's be honest with each other here, but that really is an important factor for him, because I think he has proven in the short stints that he has been healthy, he can be a productive guy. Okay?
No doubt about that.
You would agree with that, I'm
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. For me, the question up and above, or in addition to, can he do that, is who comes next and what kind of production do you get to help him out there? Whether it's the other receivers, whether it's the running backs, tight ends, fullbacks, all of those guys will help make Malik and the 2, 3, 4, 5 receivers better. And then that leads me into who is right now 2, 3, 4, and 5, right? Well, I think when we get to the fall, Chebaston Taylor will be in that mix, but he's not now because he's coming back from surgery. But you've obviously heard some of the other names that the guys have talked about this spring, and probably Phillip Brooks, just because of experience, is the next guy. And then it's pretty obvious that Keenan Garber has made a pretty good little leap here, and I think he probably would be next in line.
Well, that's somebody else.
At least
else.
I think they hope he's next in line.
Yeah, somebody else that I really want to ask about. Here's what Courtney Messingham had to say about Keenan Garber.
Been really happy with Keenan Garber. Has come to work every single day, has made plays for us, has even shown, even though he's a lighter guy, that he's not afraid to try to throw it in there and block some.
And he's been mentioned and singled out by a couple of his teammates as well as somebody that is really sticking out in spring practice. He's somebody that, going back a year and a half ago, I mean, I think there was a lot of reasonable hype for because
sure.
of it considered to be a pretty big recruiting win to get him. Chris Klieman was able to get him away from Kansas and had a decent recruiting pedigree, certainly for a local prospect. It's probably less fair to look at Garber as opposed to Knowles and be like, oh, well, we have so many questions about how this works, because he was young and small when he came in here and needed to bulk up, and he's
sure.
only been here now for 2 years. But it is another one where I say, okay, like, you know, we saw him get some snaps last year and just was never really very impactful. I will also have to see it before I believe it with him. But I would love to get your insight on what it is that you're thinking and seeing right now out of Garber.
Well, I think the strength part of it is a pretty big deal here. He came in, and the one thing he can do, well, the two things he can do is catch the ball and run. He's very good at both of those for the most part. But he needed to get stronger. He needed a better feel for the offense. He needed the team to be probably a little bit better around him. And I guess that's the point I think these guys are trying to make too, is that as an entire offense, they, I think, feel like they have a chance to be better all the way across the board. Whether it's – and I mean it's line, it's tight end, it's fullback, it's wide receivers, it's quarterbacks, it's fullbacks. They need to be better all the way across. And I think that him stepping up, I'll even throw Jalen Travis in there. There's another guy that I think they really like from a body standpoint, from the standpoint he's been in the program now a little over a year. He's learned a lot. He's been more productive in practice. And this is, you know, you just – it's what it is. It's a process of getting not only in here but getting acclimated and being productive consistently to where – you can be somebody that they rely on. I think the perfect example of that right now, it's a different position, but I'll throw another name your way, is Jacardier Wright. If you look at Jacardier Wright's body, you probably say to yourself, why doesn't he play more? Why isn't he playing more? Well, there's always reasons, right? But he too is a guy who's made a lot of progress from my perspective. We'll see what the coaches say later in the spring here, but to me, he's become a better practice player. He's become stronger. He's done a lot of things that has elevated his ability to get reps in practice. And I think that's exactly what I'm trying to say about Keenan and Jalen and some of these other guys.
Well, that's music to my ears as well. You know, I mean, Jacardier Wright obviously has the talent. I mean, yeah. I think that's been pretty obvious and definitely – I would say, like, looks the part. I even thought he looked a little bit too heavy perhaps this past year. I don't know if that
has
maybe changed some, but
that's pretty astute on your part, because if you see him now or when you see him next, I think you'll see that his body has changed some. I think that's happened to a lot of guys from the end of last year till now. And as you know, Chris Dawson was here and was exceptionally good at his job. The guy they have now, I think, will be the same. It's just that their personalities are different. But I think both are guys that have been impactful in the program that way. Jacardier, I think, decided, and again, I'm assuming some of this through coaching and motivation on his own and what have you, but I think he's ready to contribute, feels better about where he's at, body-wise, mental-wise, all of it. And I think he's put himself in the mix to see the field in a lot of ways.
So beyond Deuce,
yeah.
How do you view what the running back competition is there then? Because the other guy that I think about is Joe Urban, and he obviously has his own set of questions to answer just because it's been a year since he's played.
Yeah, but to his credit, he has played. You know, he was pretty impactful as a freshman a couple of years ago. His body's good. I think he's healthy. I haven't seen any type of depth chart, but I would tell you that I think the top four guys right now, in no particular order, although I will start with Deuce for the obvious reasons, would be Deuce, Joe, Keon, and Jacardier. Does that mean the reps would go that way? I don't know that I'm willing to say that, because I don't know that I know that necessarily. But what I'm excited about is you do have to have a lot of depth at this level, and that's pretty good depth. I mean, you'd admit that, I would think.
Yeah.
That's pretty solid depth, especially, like I say, when you see Jacardier, he looks different. He looks stronger. He looks like he's in better shape. It's just a fact.
Pretty good depth with guys that have all flashed, at least to me. You know, they've flashed some legitimate ability. So I do like hearing that. All right. The Big 12 and the NCAA tournament, only two teams left. It's all up to Kansas and Baylor. The Jayhawks play tonight. It's been a popular upset pick to have USC over Kansas. And honestly, the way that the Pac-12 is playing right now, I fear what may happen to the Jayhawks in a way. But we'll talk about what's happened with the Big 12 next here on Wildcat Insider. Should have mentioned, by the way, that it was announced here, this was over the weekend, that the final spring football practice, which will be on Saturday, April 3rd, will be open to the public. So gates will open at 11 a.m. Practice expected to run until 12 p.m. No autograph session afterwards, but you will have an opportunity to at least watch a little bit of the Cats here this spring. We'll talk more spring football here throughout the show. You can tweet us your questions at the game KMAN or to myself at JL Kurtz or at Mitch the Ford, I suppose, if you would like. You can do that as well. Beef up those follower numbers for Mitch, please. Kansas will play tonight. Oklahoma gets knocked out by Gonzaga earlier today, and we only have two teams from the Big 12 left. All those jokes that everybody got in at the Big 10 in the first round of the NCAA tournament, coming back now on the Big 12 a little bit. We've seen Texas get upset. Oklahoma State couldn't handle Oregon State yesterday. West Virginia got upset by Syracuse. Little disappointing for the Big 12 here in the last day or so.
Yeah, it's really kind of been a punch in the gut, hasn't it? As it has been for the Big 10. I mean, they still have some standing, as does the Big 12, but it's getting fewer. And I mean, we're six spots away from having the Sweet 16 decided, and UCLA has already doubled up Abilene Christian. So you can probably advance them out. So, yeah, I think for me, I guess a couple of thoughts here. I really liked West Virginia's fight after getting down big early. They really did a great job coming out of halftime. And I think they owned the first 15 minutes of that second half, actually took the lead at one point. But at the end of the day, the last 4 or 5 minutes of that game, Syracuse was the better team. They just were. And sometimes you just have to tip your cap to the opposition. The Tech game, I think, will ride with the Big 12 for a while because they had such an opportunity with a missed 1-1 and three layups late. Now, were they uncontested layups? No. They were hard. But that's a tough one to swallow because I really thought that they were going to pull that baby out, and they had every opportunity to do that.
And not just that, but I shouldn't do this to Oral Roberts, but that would have been the opponent in the Sweet 16. You
correct.
Know? I mean, you're talking about a nice path to the Elite Eight that had opened up there for Texas Tech.
I was – of all of the disappointment, for me, it all has to start with Texas. That was terrible. I didn't think Oklahoma State played well at all. I thought they settled for threes. Now, again, Oregon State was part of that. Oklahoma State had it kind of going early, and then when Oregon State – went with the two bigs, they just changed. I think they took 27 threes. That's not exactly what they do. So I think they kind of got out of sorts a little bit. Let's be honest, if I don't know how much you got a chance to watch Gonzaga and Oklahoma today. I thought Oklahoma played about as well as they're capable of playing, to be honest with you. They were pretty darn good. It's just that Gonzaga is so good offensively. Gosh dang, are they good offensively. Highly productive.
Yeah, that was always going to be, you were having to hope that Gonzaga was not going to be on their game,
And are you thinking KU up or down tonight? I'm concerned for them. There's no doubt about that.
If we're talking about it from a Big 12 standpoint, I would be concerned, although, I thought they showed me a lot, actually, in beating Eastern Washington. I understand it's Eastern
hard
Washington.
Out.
Yeah, and I understand that – Eastern Washington's wearing the jerseys that everybody's making fun of that look like, you could go find off the street for like a little kid's, little Tykes team or something. But, man, they had now I'm forgetting the dude's name, but he goes off for what, like 35, and Kansas still finds a way to win with a not 100% David McCormick.
Right.
Kansas actually did impress me with the way that they took out Eastern Washington and a team that felt like, for much of the game, like that was going to be theirs, and it was their kind of day in a first round that saw more upsets than we had ever seen, right?
Agreed.
That felt like an impressive win for Kansas.
It was for me on a lot of different fronts. One, let's give Eastern Washington credit. They did play well. They shot the ball very well, especially in the first two-thirds of the game. KU played with David McCormick not at 100% and without Jalen Wilson and still found a way to win the ball game. That's pretty admirable, no question. Now going into tonight, you would at least you never like to assume, but you would assume that they could get at least, 20 to 25 minutes out of McCormick. But I don't know that they can beat USC if Jalen Wilson is a 10-minute guy. I think he's got to be a heck of a lot closer to 30 minutes or 35 minutes, don't you?
It would make you feel a lot better.
Yeah.
I mean, here's a part of the problem. Like, I have not watched any Pac-12 basketball this year. I don't know a whole lot about USC, but what I do know is that the league is showing out really well in the tournament. I mean,
I did an interview with a guy, a friend of mine in Grand Junction before the tournament, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back here, but I told him that the Pac-12 was going to do well. I have to be honest, I didn't think they'd be 7-0 at this point, but I thought they were going to have a better showing than a lot of people thought they might. Part of it is that exposure that you're talking about. A lot of people don't see as much of those teams. But in conversations with people today, I mean, if you saw Oregon State or Oklahoma State or part of it, it's back to the old thing of, you know what, you get to this level, there's not a ton of difference in these teams. You may think there is, but, I mean, is there a difference between Eastern Washington and Gonzaga? Of course. But in a matchup like that, not that much. Stylistically, they're a little different, but generally speaking, there's not a ton. And I think it's played out that way, and you got to give them some credit. Oregon, now, in fairness, Iowa plays no defense, but Oregon looked great today. I mean, Iowa doesn't even hardly try to play. I guess because they can outscore most people. But, I mean, you look at some of the other – I mean, I think UCLA is pretty talented. I think USC is pretty talented. There's more there than meets the eye, or in this case, doesn't meet the eye because nobody's – not nobody, but very few are watching.
Yeah, understood. I mean, I had a lot of fun watching UCLA the other night in the play-in game. I mean, I thought that actually is a pretty fun team to watch. I think I would put – I would think it's about 50-50 Kansas and USC tonight,
to be
completely honest.
Sure.
A lot of variables there, and the track record of the Pac-12 would suggest that Kansas may well be in some trouble. I will be rooting for USC, but, you know, I think it will be a very good game tonight, put it that way.
Yeah, it has the makings of that. My thing is, again, I'll be repetitive here, but what do they get from Jalen Wilson, and do they make some shots? Because it will be difficult going up against the length of USC. If you think about the teams that have given Kansas some trouble, and it's easy to say this, but they are teams that have some length and some athleticism, and that's exactly what USC is. Now, will they make shots too? There's a lot of factors that go into it, but I think USC is pretty talented.
It's the late game tonight, 8:40 for the tip-off there. I tell you what, one more thing I was going to add, I just remembered this, about Oklahoma State and watching a lot of that game. I like Oklahoma State a lot. I like watching them play. I like Mike Boynton. I really like Cade Cunningham. It felt like they were a touch overseeded as a four. You know, I mean, I think they pulled out some really close games down the stretch.
Sure.
You know, in large part, Cade Cunningham really willed them to that. They picked a couple off of Oklahoma, who was kind of a slumping team there at the end of the year. It just felt to me like that was not as surprising as it maybe was to some. I mean, or as surprising as it would be if you just looked at the seeds and said, all right, a 4 against a 12.
And at the end of the day, as good as Cade Cunningham is, and I think we all agree he's really good, last night he was 6-for-20. You're not going to go very far if he's going to be 6-for-20 from the floor. It's just the reality of it.
Yeah, and didn't get enough help either. I mean, there were some open looks there at the end of the game.
No question.
In the last 3 or 4 minutes that they really had an opportunity with. All right, we'll look at the K-State baseball weekend. Wildcats take 2 out of 3 from New Mexico and start Big 12 play this week. That's next on Wildcat Insider. John Kurtz, Wyatt Thompson, Mitch Fortner here with you on Wildcat Insider. K-State baseball wins 2 of 3 this weekend over New Mexico. Fairly frustrating game on Saturday, which it's felt like a lot of these non-conference losses have been close and missed opportunities, but outside of that, just a sterling performance from Jordan Wicks on Friday night, as you would expect. He hits 10 strikeouts for a third time already this year. And then on Sunday, it was all about offense. K-State wins 17-8 to pick up Pete Hughes' 700th career victory. Not what we expected at all, because you had this pitching matchup of Connor McCullough, who had a sub-1 ERA for K-State. It only allowed 2 earned all year. and blanking on his first name, Lively, on the other
Tristan.
Side for New Mexico. There you go. Thank you, PA announcer Mitch Fortner. Tristan Lively, who had a sub-2 ERA and a guy that can run it up in the mid to upper 90s, like had some velo, and you're expecting this great pitching matchup. And Tristan Lively didn't record an out in the first inning, and Connor McCullough was touched up for runs in the first inning, as many as he had allowed all season, and gives up 5 in the first 2 innings.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, what? This is not what we expected here at all. But K-State just kept hitting the absolute heck out of the ball and wins 17-8. So you'll take it. 2 out of 3, you'll take it.
Well, and congratulations to Pete Hughes. Thinking about that yesterday and trying to let 700 wins sink in. One, you have to be around a while. Two, you have to be awfully good at what you do. And he's certainly been good for sure. That's a milestone now. That's doing it. That's 700 sounds like a lot to me. How about you?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think he's always been one of those guys that has teams that play hard and do things the right way, and they're fundamentally sound for the most part. And this team, you know, they're continuing to evolve. It hasn't been, let's be honest, it hasn't been as good a defensive team as I think we thought that it would be, at least to this point. They've been a little bit, they've got some power. There's no doubt about that. You mentioned the home runs yesterday. I think for me, I'm anxious to see them getting into league play, and you're right, it's right around the corner. They've got, I think they have a midweek game first, right? Wichita?
State tomorrow, and then at Oklahoma State this weekend. And the Cowboys have been a top 15 team.
Oh, yeah.
You know, some would consider them to be the Big 12 favorite. They came up just short in their series against Texas Tech, who is a fellow top 10 team, as they lost the rubber match 6-5. So, I mean, that will not be easy. And I believe it's twice that Oklahoma State has lost all year at home at their new ballpark that they have now, and that was to Vandy. So, I mean, they've been pretty good at home. They've been pretty good at home. I think what I would say right now about the team, there have just been different areas and question marks that have kind of ebbed and flowed throughout the non-conference mm-hmm. portion of the schedule. I still feel very good about, in general, the starting rotation. I know it was not Connor McCullough's day yesterday,
right,
but he's been so good since he got here, you know, even last year, attaching that onto what he was doing at the beginning of this year. You know what Jordan Wicks is going to be. Carson Seymour, there is still something left to be desired there right now, but Casey Ford, who's kind of been piggybacking with him, has been mm-hmm. really good.
Yeah.
So you have some options there on Saturday. It's the bullpen, and then the lineup has some holes. Like, you're waiting on Cam Thompson to come around. You're waiting on – now, Chris Tobio started to finally show some signs of life here this weekend. Those are the things that I would worry about more. Even though this weekend, the bullpen and the offense in particular on Sunday were great, that's where I have more worry about going into the conference and hoping that that doesn't get exposed too much.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with that, but I'm like you. I was excited to see the bullpen work from yesterday because that was a shot in the arm, right? I mean, they very much needed that. And I do think there are some guys on this club right now that are really locked in and are hitting it pretty good. And then there are some other guys that you're hoping, let's take a step forward here, maybe hoping for more out of on a more consistent basis. If that happens, I think you'd be pretty happy with the results.
Yeah.
Because some of those lead guys have really been pretty darn consistent.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking right now. K-State is leading the league in home runs with 30. That's one more than Texas Tech, and that's a team that always can swing it.
Yep.
And, you know, Cameron Wilman's hitting. Dylan Phillips has been great. Zach Akoska's been really good. Nick Goodwin, as a true freshman, has been really good. So they have some guys. They have some dudes that are playing pretty well. We'll come back in hour two and look at what the DeJuan Gordon transfer means for the K-State roster. That's next on Wildcat Insider.